Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
All righty. I feel as good as I felt 3 hours ago.
How about that?
This is our fourth hour. I guess I owe that to longevity.
I guess
all,
you do.
All reality. Yes.
I've got to criticize part of that opening statement I just heard, though.
Okay. Oh.
Body and he's going to help your body and your brain. Brain is part of the body. Okay.
Well, that's
what he meant was.
I wrote that, so you're
okay.
You're
criticizing you.
Okay.
What he meant was your body and your mind. Okay.
Here's the
difference. Mind is to brain as strength is to muscle. Okay. Better muscle makes you stronger.
Okay.
Better brain makes you smarter. But the brain is a part of the body.
All right. I'll ask Jerry Berg to get that redone.
All right.
All right. Good point.
Okay.
Good point. Again, this is hour number four altogether. We do 2 hours every Saturday morning from 8 to 10 on another station in town, and then from 10 to noon right here on 570 KVI. For the last number of years, we've obviously only been 1 hour, starting, I think, about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
We're now 2 hours every Saturday here on KVI, and that is very, very good news for us. We're happy about that. All right, we had Steve on the line. We've held him over. Steve, are you still with us?
Still with you, still happily with
okay.
you. I'm going to rephrase this question to maybe make it easier for people that weren't here the last hour. As I understand it, pneumonia fills the lungs with fluid, so it reduces the air volume, so it makes it harder to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Does COVID-19 also reduce the air volume, or does it just affect the ability of the alveoli to absorb the oxygen?
Okay, both. Here's what's going on with this: the really sick people is they're getting an infection and they get a pneumonia. Pneumonia, by definition, is an infection of the alveoli, the air sacs in the lung. That infection results in an inflammatory process, and that inflammation causes the alveoli and the mucous membranes to start secreting mucus. And you basically fill your lungs with liquid, with pus and muck and exudates. And so you can't exchange air. You don't get gas exchange. You don't get rid of your carbon dioxide. You don't bring oxygen in. The other problem is that the people that tend to go on and die are not killed directly by the virus. What they're killed by generally is an overreaction of the immune system. You react to the virus, the process of the virus, with this gigantic inflammatory reaction. And that inflammatory reaction kicks out destructive cytokines that destroy tissue. And you're basically destroying your own lungs in reaction to the virus. And an analogy to that those of us with some years on us might remember. When we were kids, you remember something called rheumatic fever? Rheumatic heart disease, rheumatic fever. All that really was a strep infection, streptococcus. Little strep would invade your throat. And the strep is growing on the mucous membrane in your throat. And by itself, it's an irritant. It hurts when you swallow and stuff. But what caused the rheumatic fever was your body, when it reacted to that strep, it attacked proteins on the surface of the strep that are very similar to proteins on your heart valves. And in the process of killing the strep, it also attacked your own heart valves and damaged your heart valve. And so the strep resulted in heart disease in these children, not because the strep invaded the heart. The strep was up in the throat. But it's the autoimmune disease triggered by that that caused the heart damage. Now, when we started using penicillin and getting rid of the strep, we got rid of rheumatic heart disease. Okay, so we treated heart disease with penicillin in a roundabout way, very effectively. We almost never see rheumatic heart disease anymore because any kid comes in with a sore throat, he gets some sort of antibiotic about two-thirds of the time, and it wipes out the bugs, and we don't see much heart disease. Same sort of thing here. You're reacting to the virus, but the reaction in some people is so overwhelming that your own immune system is what's killing your lungs and your kidneys.
Okay. So, okay.
All right.
Now that leads to another question. If somebody knows the normal volume of air, say 3 liters, the lungs can take in, and they measure it at home and find it's down to 2 liters, that would suggest they're in trouble.
It might, but what you're really looking at, again, you're talking about mean values, what most healthy people can do. There are big people and little people. There are fat people and thin people.
Oh, no, I'm talking about an individual.
No, I understand.
Set himself up, for example.
Yes. So what you'd need to do is you do a pulmonary function test on this individual to get a baseline. Then if his pulmonary function is declining, you have to look for a reason. Yes.
Okay.
But if I don't know what his baseline value is, I don't know whether this is really a decline or not.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, I do that myself, actually. And the way I do it is take a gallon full of water, turn it upside down into a tub of water, put a hose into it, take a deep breath, blow through the hose, and the amount of water that I displace is the volume of air.
That is
so I have
true.
My baseline.
I think you were an engineer. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, what else?
Yeah, most of us are not engineers. So, yeah. All right. But yes.
So it would seem to me that if people would do that, if they can't get the tests, they can at least see if their volume is being reduced.
Well, yeah, if it's damaging your lung. But remember, most of us don't get lung damage. The vast majority of people that get infected have no symptoms. Maybe a little runny nose, maybe a little hacky cough for a day or two. Maybe they're a little tired. That's all they have. The people who get sick are the minority. That's the interesting thing. Most healthy people have an immune system that throws this virus off with no trouble. Some people have an immune system that the virus gets a good foothold. They get sick. They cough. They hack. They're miserable for a week or so, and then they recover. A small percentage of people get really, really sick and have this overwhelming immune response and get on the ventilator and die. But they're a tiny percentage of the total people infected.
So, okay, so good way to tell if you're okay is if you stay alive.
You stay alive and run. Yeah, if you can run and jump and leap and cavort.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if my now 8-year-old daughter got infected, you know, when she was in China in January, well, she never noticed it because she never had a cough. She never had a fever. But I would love to check her antibody level and see if she's immune.
Yeah.
You know, maybe she is. Yeah. It would be nice to know. Which brings us to the antibodies, which is something you alluded to earlier that you said which test is the most common? Well, the virus test, the active viral infection test, is the most common one because that's the one we developed first, and we've been using it now for about 5 or 6 weeks. The antibody tests, over 90 companies now have submitted their tests to the FDA for approval. Those companies have all tested and validated internally. Now they need the government to repeat the validation and say, yes, you did it right. You can now sell this test. This week, they approved 3. So 3 of the 90 have now been approved by the FDA and can be used. Next week, I expect there will be 10 or 12 more, and the next week, probably 30 or 40 more. The problem is that now the tests have been approved, somebody needs to manufacture the tests and distribute those tests to the doctors in the clinics so that you can actually get the test. So we now have 3 approved tests in America. What we need now is to give them a little time to spool up, manufacture to them, distribute them, get them out so that you and I can get the tests. That's really where we want to go.
What a great amount of information you gave me and many others. So thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Take care. Bye-bye.
All righty. Well, that opens up a line at 888-312-5757. And let us go to, do we have time? Yeah, we do. Let's go to Erica in Seattle. Erica, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. You've answered some of my questions about why diabetics are more affected by the COVID-19. Uh-huh. A lot of it has to do with fat.
The fat caused the diabetes most of the time. Yeah. But the diabetes is a metabolic disease in which every cell in your body now has impaired energy metabolism. So the heart, the brain, the kidneys, and the muscles, nothing works as well as it's supposed to when you're diabetic.
I haven't been diagnosed, but I know I'm pre-diabetic because of lab tests.
Uh-huh.
And so they won't refer me to a diabetic doctor because
you're not diabetic.
I'm at like 100. Yeah.
Well, so why don't you come and let us fix it?
Supplement. Well, yeah, I was thinking that maybe, there's some supplements. I think I need to increase weightlifting. I think exercise. I'm not fat.
Good. But what is your visceral fat level compared to your muscle mass?
Well, my visceral fat is 8. I've had some tests done. I've had an in-body test done.
Good, good. Okay, so you're a little below the average because 10 is about the average. That's good. All right. So what we want to do is increase muscle mass.
Okay. But my my A1C and my blood sugars, they're all, the blood sugar is over 100 and A1C is 5.6. So
okay, yeah.
Not that good.
No, my target would be to get you down around 5.2 or less.
Yeah. So probably strength training and
strength and aerobics. Yeah, it's a mix.
Anaerobic. I do aerobic now. I think I need to incorporate strength.
Okay, good.
And I bought some berberine. I heard that helps.
Yes, berberine is almost as good as metformin at lowering blood sugars.
Okay. And are there any other supplements that you would?
No, I mean, resveratrol, berberine, astaxanthin. Astaxanthin is especially good in people over 50 or 60 at increasing muscle strength and endurance. If your kidney function is good, you can add a little bit of creatine. These are all of benefit, but you got to watch your kidney function with the creatine. And the biggest failing that most people over 50 have is that their anabolic hormone load is down. Thyroid is starting to drop function, and so you don't have as much energy metabolism. Dehydroepiandrosterone, pregnenolone, testosterone are all declining with age, and those all decrease strength, muscle mass, endurance. So, moving all of those back up to a more robust level is a real benefit.
Yeah, that happens at a clinic like yours, but not too many other places.
Right? That's right. You got it. Very few people outside of clinics like mine will do it.
Okay. Okay, well, it gives me something to think about. Thank you
so much. You're welcome, ma'am. Take care.
All right. Welcome. Okay, good. We've got to go to a break right now. We're just a couple of minutes late. And so that we do now have an extra line open. So 888-312-5757 is the number to call. And when we come back, we'll talk with we can't. We've got Dr. Gilbert is going to be calling in at 11:15.
That's 3 minutes ago.
That means now. So that means he's on the line. Ooh, I didn't see that. There we go. Okay, excellent. We've got Dr. Michael Gilbert on the line from Northwest Vision Institute. And so you don't go far when we come back. And I think we're going to have Judy on the line. She has a question for Dr. Gilbert if she's called back in from Hobart. So hang on. Don't go far. We'll be right back.
I went to a seminar 10 years ago. At that time, I noticed that my cholesterol had spiked. And plus, I was going through menopause at the time. And there were just lots of changes going on. And once I got on hormones and got straightened out, I just saw a total change in everything. I mean, I saw results like within 2 weeks. It was truly a miracle. And so, you know, I'm hooked.
Come with me, my love, to the sea of love.
All right, it is about 20 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Pete Talbot. I've got Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio with me again today. Dr. Mixon is the founder and chief medical officer of Longevity Medical Clinic. I like to stick that in there at least every week or two because we always get new listeners.
Yep.
And they're kind of wondering, well, who the heck is that guy? You have something you wanted to share?
We are on the verge, I hope, if Mr. Inslee will do what he should do, of starting to reopen things here in Washington State.
Yeah. No comment.
And, well, you know, we have, for our population, the flattest curve in the country. No one else is getting new cases as slow as we are that started off with a significant illness. Now, there are a few people like... like South Dakota, that is a small population dispersed. Except for one meatpacking plant, they've had almost no cases. Yeah.
In spite of what you just said, he's still not opening.
He's still not opening. When he opens, I'm thinking we should be looking at the countries, the areas that have done well without having to shut everything down.
That's right.
I agree. What they're doing. And let me give you an example. Taiwan. The country of Taiwan, although Japan and the World Health Organization does not recognize, I'm sorry, not Japan, China and the World Health Organization do not accept that Taiwan exists. But it does. It's a real country. And Taiwan has 24 million people. We have just under 5 million people in Washington State. So they have five times as many people as we've had. We've had 570 deaths. They've had six.
My goodness.
All right. Yeah. They have five times as many people as we've had. They've had six deaths. We have one-fifth as many people as they have. We've had 570 deaths. Now, who's doing it right? Okay, I'd say Taiwan, because they're right
there. What are they doing?
Well, they are wearing masks. Everybody wears a mask.
Everybody.
If you walk out of your house, you wear a mask in Taiwan. You want to go to a grocery store, you wear a mask. You want to go to a restaurant, you wear a mask. By the way, restaurants are open. Okay, but they won't let you in the restaurant without a mask. And you wear your mask. You go to your table. You sit down wearing your mask. You order your food still wearing your mask. Your
buses.
Food comes, you take your mask off. You can't get on a bus. No taxi will pick you up if you don't have a mask. Okay, masks are absolutely critical. Okay, but then they do contact testing. If anybody does get sick, they jump on it. They isolate the family. They test everybody in the family. They test all your coworkers. They test everybody near you, and they isolate anybody that came up positive with the disease. But by doing that, they've limited the number of diseases. Okay, they've only had, even though they have five times Washington's population, 390 cases.
Good grief.
Total, 390 cases. And yesterday they had no new cases reported.
Wow.
None. Places like Taiwan are what we need to emulate.
Hong Kong,
Taiwan, Singapore. Yes, places where, but the biggest single factor is masks. Everybody should be wearing a mask if they're out in the house and around other people.
Well, we do have a question that came in. How long can I wear my mask? I'm not sure we have time. I've got Dr. Michael Gilbert waiting. But
let's do Michael on board.
But maybe we can address that with or without or after. Dr. Michael Gilbert. Michael, good morning
Hello,
to you,
Michael.
Sir.
And good morning to you. Along with you, we have a policy that comes from our that Asian experience in the practice, and that is all masks all the time.
Yeah. Well, and I wouldn't say all. And when you go home, you know, take your mask off, hug your wife.
In the practice.
That's right.
In the practice.
Yes. Yeah. You spend very little time hugging employees, I presume. So
I don't think the dogs would recognize you with the mask on, Jerry.
That's right. I don't want you bit. But yes.
But hey, you know, I'm just for all of our new listeners, we've had Dr. Michael Gilbert on several times lately. You know, with this pandemic, I'm trying to get all of our doctors that we have as guests to call in on a pretty regular basis. But I received a text earlier that said, I think my vision has decreased over the last 2 weeks. Can I treat this at home? If not, is this urgent? How urgent is this? And so this is why you're here now, Dr. Gilbert, Michael. And can you answer that?
Oh, absolutely. I think if you can put in artificial tears and it's totally back to normal, then I think that it's reasonable to wait on that. That's probably just dry eyes. But if that simple home test doesn't completely resolve it, then it's definitely something that you should get checked out and probably not wait. Now, a lot depends on age and other things that are going on. So, for instance, if you're 20s or 30s, there's a retina condition that can cause that in one eye at a time. Older, I might think that it could be diabetic retinopathy, macular degeneration, but all of those benefit from treatment, and fortunately, the diagnosis is really very, very simple. We have a technology that about a 15-second scan of the retina, and we can differentiate all of those, and we're working to be the safest eye exam in town with masks and our virtual waiting rooms and what have you. So while we're taking more urgent patients, you know, that's something that we can work in. If you have a persistent change in vision that isn't addressed just by putting in some artificial tears.
Well, good to know. Good to know. Man, I'm glad you you called in on that. I also understand there's some new research about tear gland loss. Tell us about that.
Yeah, interesting research that was just published within the last week that showed that patients with diabetes who didn't have excellent glucose control, blood sugar control, is associated with permanent gland loss for the tear glands in the eye. Loss, therefore, that would lead to permanent dry eyes and symptoms that probably continue to progress. So I think we have yet another aspect of the diabetic eye exam that we have to look at very carefully to make sure that there isn't both no retina damage as well as damage to the gland system.
Interesting. Excellent. Excellent. Now, I think we've got Judy on hold here. So let's go to Judy right now from Hobart. Judy, welcome to the show. You're on with Dr. Michael Gilbert.
Thank you, Pete. And I wanted to let you know, I love your bumper music, Pete. Very good.
Oh. Okay. Okay,
good morning, Dr. Gilbert. I'm really
morning,
happy
Judy.
To be able to talk with you. Have a quick question for you. January of 2019, I had cataract removal. I noticed in the last month, I'd say, my right eye is like I'd call it leaking water, and I've it feels like when you get a scratch on your eyeball. I've flushed it with Visine and also artificial tears, and it just still feels like I've done that. I'm sorry. About the last 4 or 5 days, and it just still feels like a small scratch. I just wanted your opinion.
Perfect. Do you wake up with that that mild irritation and tearing, or does it develop during the day?
It in the day it's not as prevalent. Okay, it's not there as much. But I noticed in the morning when I wake up, yes, to answer your question, it does tear a lot.
Right when you wake up?
Yes.
The most common reason for you having those symptoms, both the mild irritation and the tearing, right when waking, is you may be sleeping with your eye just cracked open just the slightest amount. The way to test that would be to put just a tiny bit of eye ointment, ophthalmic ointment, pull down your lower lid, put that tiny droplet of that eye ointment in just before you hit the pillow for several days and see if that changes those symptoms.
Okay.
Right now, the most common reason for new tearing, new foreign body sensation during the day is we're spending much more time indoors reading and on the computer, and tearing can often be a sign of the eye drying out. It dries out to the point that the ocular system switches into the emergency, or what's called the reflex tears, and starts flooding the surface for that to address the irritation. So paying attention to, you know, if you can associate it with certain tasks like reading, television, computer use, then that dry eye aspect may be part of what's triggering it. But the most common reason for it being present on waking is sleeping with your eye cracked open just a little bit. So if you have an air purifier or a fan or a window open or some airflow, but more importantly, you may just be sleeping in such a way that your eyelid is distorted and a little air getting to it. Now, if those two fixes don't address it, then we should take a look.
And you're not.
But
open.
I cannot think of a way that this is associated with your cataract surgery.
Okay, no, I'm not after this long. I agree with you. But I noticed before I even put my eye makeup on, after I'm up and around, and then I get ready to put my eye makeup on, it just runs. So I thought, this is goofy.
And
we do sleep at night with a little bit of the window open a bit.
So that tearing is the body's attempt to wash out something that it believes may be noxious or irritating or damaging the surface of the eye. It's trying to save you. So you need to fix whatever's triggering that.
Right.
The most common reason on waking would be that little bit of exposure at night. Could be the way you're resting on your hand or distorting the eyelid. Could be a number of things. But one easy test is to get some ophthalmic eye ointment, put just the tiniest bit in just before you hit the pillow, then maybe use some heat to melt it out, just a hot washcloth when you first wake up to melt it out. And after 5 to 7 days of that, there's a good chance, if that's what's happening, that should fix it.
Okay, it's just over-the-counter ointment?
Yes.
Eye ointment,
yep.
And is it called anything in...
Well, there are a number of different brands, but you'll find ophthalmic ointments, a couple of brand names, Refresh PM, Sustain Nighttime, Lacrolube. There are a number of different ones. Use just the tiniest bit. All you need is a non-evaporating substance in the eye, because if you just put an artificial teardrop or a gel, anything water-based won't protect you all night.
Okay. And with that, Judy, thank you. Excellent call. We hope that helps. And let me say thank you to you, Dr. Michael Gilbert. And she started to ask you the question, can you see her?
Absolutely.
All right.
We're seeing urgent patients all week long. This week is almost full, but I do know we have several, about one appointment a day, late in the week. So we're absolutely seeing patients who need to be seen.
Here is the number for Northwest Vision Institute in Bellevue, 425-450-2020. That's 425-450-2020. Michael, thank you so much. Man, I'm glad I caught you again, and
thank you both
on.
For a great program.
Thanks a lot. All right. Hey, we've got more calls, but we have two lines open right now. So why don't you call and get in line at 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. We've got Erica will be up next after the break. She's got a question about prediabetes and supplements to help. Don't go far.
Leading Edge Medicine. Do you have a question? Well, you can call now at 1-888-312-5757 and tell your friends to listen too.
That's 1-888-312-5757.
Before longevity, I had 20 pounds to lose, and now they're gone. How nice is that?
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him two lips like roses and clover. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over.
You know, I remember that as a kid.
Yeah. I think the Cordettes are one of the least appreciated singing groups in America.
Yeah.
They did some really cute, cute stuff.
That's right. Sort of the fabric of the 50s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, late 40s and 50s. Yeah, they did, what's the one about?
They were big in the late 40s, too.
Oh, yeah, during the Second World War. They've got one about lay down your arms, about soldiers.
Okay.
And he's telling them to, you know, hop on the train and come home and march with me down Lover's Lane.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, you know? I don't remember that one. But again,
lay down your arms and fall into mine, sort of thing.
All right.
It was really, it's very cute.
Interesting. Well, okay. I just realized that we had already spoken to Erica, and I messed that up. So we have all the lines open right now. So, folks,
oh my goodness,
you call right now, even though I've got a question that is called in that we never answered. If you have a question for Dr. Mixon, it can be about anything, does not have to be about the virus. It can be, not a problem. But our number, 888-312-5757. 888-312-5757. And the question that people called in, and this seems to come in every week. In fact, I get people calling me during the week. How long can I wear my mask? It's a good question.
It is. And it depends in part on what your exposure to the virus is and exactly what kind of mask you have. N95 masks come in multiple forms.
Yeah.
Okay. Some of them are foam-based, some of them are fabric-based, and so on.
What are ours?
Ours are fabric-based.
Okay. Yeah. There's no foam in there. Okay.
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
But one of our forms, the one that is more of a cone out in front of you, mm-hmm. that one is actually shaped of a synthetic fiber that is made on a mold. Mm-hmm. And when you first put it on, it stinks like plastic. But
oh, it's not that
I don't
bad,
like that one. I use the other kind.
Okay.
Anyway, the masks. If you are a healthcare worker and you're in the hospital and you're exposed to large amounts of coronavirus every day, either throw that mask away at the end of the day or go get it sterilized formally, because it's getting a big load. Those of us that are not doing in that healthcare setting, those of us that are just walking down the street and you're going to the grocery store and stuff, your chances of even coming near somebody with coronavirus is about 1 in 1,000. On
really?
Any given trip.
With or without a mask.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So you put a mask on when you leave the house, you go out, you go to the grocery store, but you got to remember 5 million people are going to the grocery store. So 1 in 1,000 means a fair number of people are getting exposed in the course of the day.
Okay.
Because
a
million is 1,000 thousands.
Yeah.
So 5,000 people, if it's 1 in 1,000, 5,000 people in Washington will be exposed on any given day.
Okay.
All right. Now, a small percentage of those will catch the virus. But the point is, you put that mask on, you go leave your house, you drive to the store, you walk to the store like I like to do, and you go in the store, you do your shopping, you go home, you got about 1 chance in 1,000 that you have even been exposed to somebody, and is maybe 1 chance in 10,000 that you've got a virus on your mask. That does not mean you have to throw that mask away with 1 chance in 10,000. What you do is you reach up, you take those earpieces off, holding those, you lay the mask down in a windowsill where it has sunshine and air circulation. Don't cover it up. Put it down with the outside of the mask up. Virus on fabric lives 3 to 4 hours on average. Just the oxygen in the air will oxidize and damage and destroy that virus within 3 to 4 hours. okay? And ultraviolet light from the sunshine kills it even faster. So you take that mask off, you put it down on the windowsill, outside form up. Now you go wash your hands before you touch or do anything because you've handled the mask. And you're fine. You wear that mask now the next day when you go out and exercise again. Or you wear it in the morning. You give it 4 or 5 hours, you do it again. If you need to put on the mask every 2 hours, get two masks.
See, our that's right. Our masks, gosh, I think it seems so quality. I'm going to be using that a long time.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I put it up on the dashboard of my car, actually.
Yeah, me too.
Because I don't wear it while I'm driving the car, but I reach up, I take it, I put it on before I go into the store.
Yeah.
I come back out, I take it off, I put it back on the dashboard in the sunshine to be sterilized by the ultraviolet light.
Yeah. So the odds of me going to a grocery store with my mask on of infecting my grandkids.
Extremely low.
Just really low.
If you don't have the virus actively growing in your body right now, you can't infect anybody.
And it's been, for me, it's been almost 2.5 weeks since I haven't even been in a store. I've just chosen to not go into stores or do anything.
Yeah. And see, we as a family, it's about 2.5 miles to the store. And we walk as a family. We walk to the store together. It's an hour. We're going down the Cross Kirkland corridor, so we're way out in the boondocks. We don't go within 10 feet of another human being on the entire walk. We put on our masks. We go in the store. We do our shopping. We take our masks off. They go back in the bag. We go home. We put them on the counter, and we let them sterilize for the next day. But we walk to the store every day. I like the activity.
So my grandkids are pretty safe.
Your grandkids are safe.
All right.
Besides which, they're kids.
Well,
chances of them getting hurt by the virus are tiny, tiny, tiny.
Well,
you're the one that would die, not them.
Well, I've got one grandchild that has lung problems.
Yes, that's true. You've got a couple of high-risk grandkids.
That's right. So we're being, I haven't hugged and kissed and smothered those sweet little babies for a long time, and it's heartbreaking, quite frankly.
Yes, I understand
that. Literally, I get emotional about those sweethearts. Anyway, enough about that. Let us go to Bellevue and talk to Betsy. Hey, Betsy, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thank you for taking the call.
You're welcome, ma'am.
I was listening to the coronavirus discussion, and I've heard it said before about you get this overwhelming inflammatory action. What I'm trying to find out is that there is some way to prevent it from going into that stage other than being extraordinarily healthy.
Well, yeah. The vast majority of people, it will not go to that stage. Okay. You know, the last study that came out of New Jersey was that they think about 85 people infected for every person we've recognized as being infected. All right. So the vast majority of us get this virus and it's no big deal. It is that minority that really gets sick. You know, it's a relatively tiny percentage of people, maybe 15-20%, are going to get a clinical illness at all. They're going to get a cough and shortness of breath and fatigue and fever and be miserable. But most people are not even going to get that. The percentage of people that get that overwhelming infection is a tiny subset. It's a fraction of 1% are going to have that serious overwhelming infection that puts them at risk of dying. And they are almost all elderly with other metabolic disorders, diabetes and prediabetes being the two biggest ones, actually. People that run insulin resistance and have to carry higher sugars, because people don't realize diabetes is not just a matter of high sugar. Diabetes is a disease in which energy metabolism in every cell in your body is impaired. You do not metabolize your substrates and make energy effectively. And long before you become a diabetic, that process is becoming impaired. By the time your A1C is in the neighborhood of 5.6 or 5.7, you have significant impairment. you are accelerating the rate at which your brain is shrinking. Your brain cells are dying faster. You're developing plaque in your arteries. Your joints are degenerating because they can't repair and grow new tissue well.
I think I heard you say that at 5.8, you are killing brain cells twice as many as at 5.2.
Yeah, 5.7. Yeah. 5.7, you've doubled the rate at which your brain cells are dying compared to 5.2. And you're not a diabetic until you're 6.5.
Serious?
Yeah. So long before you become a diabetic, as the insulin resistance is developing and your average sugars are starting to rise, even if they're in the middle of the so-called normal range, you're impairing glucose metabolism.
I guess a good way of saying this, if you are becoming a diabetic.
If you're en route. If you're in the if you're in the upper half of normal, you're in trouble. And unfortunately, as we get older, that's happening to a bigger and bigger percentage. By the time you're in your 60s, two-thirds of Americans have impaired glucose metabolism. That's our problem.
All righty. Hey, thank you, Betsy, for the call. Another darn good reason to get the two free tests that we make available in our free health analysis appointment.
We'll tell you where you are now.
Will it tell the 5.2? Or
yes, absolutely.
Oh, my golly. More about that when we come back. And also, we'll take calls from Reggie and Randy when we come back.
You hear all the time about fitness and doing exercise. Where do you get the energy to start your exercise program? With Longevity, I was able to start my exercise program, and that parlayed into more energy, of which I ended up going from 220 pounds to about 180 pounds in about 2 years. And that has changed my life. And that's why I tell everyone I know about Longevity.
Really, 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 are you really mine? Really, 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 are you really mine?
You tell me that you love me, and you tell me that you want me, and you even wear my graduation ring. It's too wonderful, it's too beautiful, it's a fantastic thing. Are you really, really mine?
Ah, Jimmy Rogers, what a cool dude. He had a cool dude. Let's just leave it there. You just heard that little testimonial.
Yes.
Coming back from the break. Now, he lost, as a patient at Longevity, he lost 40 pounds.
Good.
During 2 years. Mm-hmm. And we like to make the point that we are not a weight loss clinic. Sometimes it seems obvious, like maybe we are, but we're not. But weight loss does happen.
If he did what I want him to do.
Which he did.
He lost 40 pounds in net weight. He probably lost 55 pounds in fat and added 15 pounds of muscle.
You're right. That's probably what happened.
So his net loss was 40 pounds. But he's probably got 15 pounds more muscle than he had when he started and 55 pounds less fat.
Interesting.
Okay. The scale tells you what the net is, but what you want is the ratios. You want to increase muscle mass while decreasing fat.
And this, I'm so glad you said that, because this is what we tell you with the in-body test,
precisely,
which is part of what we give as a free test in our free health analysis appointments.
Mm-hmm. Because when we're talking about that glucose metabolism, that energy metabolism we were just talking about that you head towards as you move in the direction of diabetes, even if you are technically normal.
Right.
That fat is producing more than 80 different enzymes, peptides, cytokines that are destructive. That fat is actually producing chemicals in your bloodstream that are causing your brain cells to die faster, your heart to form plaque in your arteries, your cartilage to start breaking down and cause arthritis. It is causing your skin to thin out and go bad. It is a destructive. Fat is dangerous and destructive. Working muscle produces more than 100 different, what we refer to as myokines, compounds that cause tissue to grow more efficiently, to heal and repair and decrease inflammation and decrease pain. Working muscle is good. Visceral fat is bad. We need to measure both, and we need to shift your metabolism so that you make more muscle and less fat.
So here's the bottom line. You've heard it 1,000 times. If you don't measure, you don't know. So we just decided at Longevity, we'll do some basic measuring for you.
But you got to do measure more than your weight.
Yes.
The scale doesn't tell you that.
Oh.
We need to measure the amount of muscle and the amount of fat, and then we watch the change over time.
So basically, the free health analysis appointment, we do a blood test, we do the in-body test, so that you can understand what some of your basic risks are. And we also, through May now, we're also doing, we extended the free $100 worth of longevity supplements of your choice, whatever ones you want, when you come in. Through May, we opened up, I think there's 7 in Kirkland and about 15-ish or so, both in Tacoma and Linwood clinics. And so make your free health. Oh, and then, of course, the free mask.
Two free masks.
Keep reminding me that you get a mask for yourself and also for your spouse. And by the way, an N95 mask. Mm-hmm. And so we can help you there. But there's only so many. Make your appointment online at lmclinic.com. They're available on a first-come, first-served basis at lmclinic.com. Or you can call on Monday. There should be some left, 866-86-YOUNG. 866-86-YOUNG. Let's go to Reggie. Reggie, welcome to the show.
Hi, gentlemen. Good to hear you on the radio. It's very calming and informative and fun.
We're good. Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure indeed. And I am calling about the COVID-19 and smoking. I live somewhere where I want to go out on my porch and I want to breathe fresh air, but my neighbors on other balconies are smoking. And I just think I have two parts. One, is that a really good way to spread it into the air, or because the air is heated and the virus doesn't like heat, is it, that's the topic.
All right. Well, we don't really know how this particular virus reacts to heat. Okay. Many coronaviruses don't. And become seasonal and act up in the fall. But we don't really know about this particular one. So we have to wait and see what happens as the temperatures change. We are hopeful. I know the president is betting that it will, but I don't know yet. I always stay skeptical till I see the data. What else? Let's see. Your neighbors are smoking and you don't like to breathe the air. Do you own a shotgun? No, never mind. let's see. I don't want to get you arrested.
It's very, very frustrating because when I moved in the building, they said it was no smoking. And then about a year later, they said, well, that means in your units. And I was like,
I know. And damn. You know, there is a time and a place where being a bitch is appropriate. And I think a little screaming and yelling.
Witch, right?
Absolutely. We don't run a kennel for beagles. A little social pressure. As much social pressure as you can put on without, speak up.
Yeah.
Talk to the management. Go to the next condo or apartment board meeting. And talk to the people that are running the place. If you don't let them know that you are unhappy there, no one is gonna know. So, be outspoken.
But apart from that, I'm not sure how we can help you, Reggie.
No, I wish we could. I am so opposed to smoking because I have seen the widespread metabolic disaster that smoking is. I mean, the horrible things it does to your brain and your heart and your lungs and your kidneys and the negative response on your immune system and how much faster you age. And, women who smoke look 30 years older by 50 than women who don't smoke. I mean, it's just awful.
And isn't it interesting in China? It's one thing that I remember in China. Often we'd be sitting in a restaurant in the no smoking section. They didn't give a rip.
No,
and people
smokes.
Would be like a table of 8.
Yes.
And like 4 of the adults were eating with a cigarette
in their hand. Yes, yes. And the average lifespan in China, primarily due to air pollution and smoking, is about 12 years shorter than America.
That's right. All right. And maybe someday we'll do a deep dive on smoking, but I think it's pretty obvious. Hey, thank you for being with us. Don't forget, we've got a limited number of the free HA appointments, 2 free tests, 2 free masks, $100 worth of longevity supplements. We're at least doing that through May. And if you want to make an appointment, we do have some. Go to lmclinic.com. lmclinic.com. Schedule your own. If you can't do that online, call us on Monday, 866-86-YOUNG. 866-86-YOUNG. Hey, blessings to each of you. Thanks for being with us. We shall see you again next week.